Vanjakapatarubhyascha Kripasindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavyo Namaha. So Lord Shiva was so angry. This was actually described earlier in one of Prabhupada's purports as due to him being the guna avatar. Guna means the qualities. There are three qualities of material nature, three powers, forces that control everything within the material world. They are rajas, the mode of passion, tamas, the mode of ignorance, and sattva-guna, the mode of goodness. So Lord Shiva is the controller of the mode of ignorance. And his specific service is especially called for at the time when the destruction of the universe is required. And then Lord Shiva, evoking the full potency of ignorance, destroys the universe. So even though Lord Shiva is a transcendental personage, still due to this contamination of the motive, or the due to the being in touch rather than a contamination, being in touch with the mode of ignorance, he is not considered on the same level as Lord Vishnu. And due to that tendency of tamagun, or the mode of ignorance, he became furious when Sati had emoluated herself and burnt herself when disrespected by her father Daksha. And Lord Shiva became furious, and he decided to destroy the Daksha and the sacrifice that Daksha was performing. So he sent his personified anger, practically speaking, whose name was Birbhadra, to destroy the sacrifice. And Birbhadra just did that. So the sacrifice was destroyed. There were incredible casualties inflicted upon the demigods. Daksha was killed. His head was chopped off. Bhrigu lost his teeth, no mustache, but also, did he lose his eyes also? No. Yes, no?
Not Bhrigu.
But Pusha lost his eyes and his teeth, yes. And other demigods who had acted improperly, Bhaga lost something. So in this way, there was a great destruction of the sacrifice. So the other participants, the demigods and the sages, they were so disturbed, they went to Lord Brahma. And we read that yesterday, how they went to Lord Brahma and they said, what to do? What should we do? This horrible thing has happened. Because naturally, we proceed in our life with full confidence, thinking that we know just what's going on. But when something disastrous happens, we question everything. We question our very existence. Why has this happened? What have I done wrong? How can I rectify it? Who has done this part, etc.? So one rethinks and reconstructs reality, so to speak, or a specific view of reality when a disaster occurs. So the demigods, they approached Lord Brahma and asked what to do about this. And Lord Brahma suggested very strongly, and he said he would accompany them, that they go and see Lord Shiva and apologize, because Lord Shiva is such a powerful personality, and one should, above everything else practically speaking, avoid blaspheming, making inimical such a powerful personality. It's true in the material world, and it's still more true in the spiritual world. For practical purposes, it's true in the material world. You don't want to make enemies of the powerful people of this world. In a practical sense. But spiritually, it's even more true. Because if one makes an enemy in this world, you have him to reckon with. He can cause you so much trouble, possibly. But yet, how much trouble he can cause is limited. But if we offend a great, great devotee, you don't really even have him to worry about, but you have Krishna to worry about, because Krishna becomes angry. He becomes the enemy of his devotee's enemy. Krishna is samoham samabhuteshu. Name dveshastina priya is equal to all living entities. And yeyetamam prapadyante. But yet, that if someone becomes a devotee of Krishna with his full heart, Krishna becomes so devoted to that devotee, bhaktivatsalya atma parjanta vadanyata, he gives himself to that devotee and he becomes partial, even though he is completely impartial in a very real sense. But to his devotee, he is partial. So if one becomes inimical, malicious to a devotee, malicious means wishing him harm, then Krishna does not take kindly to that. So Lord Brahma told, because Lord Shiva, of course, is the greatest of devotees of Vaishnavas, Vaishnavaram Vita Shambhu. So, Lord Brahma said, you have made a great mistake, but Lord Shiva is Asutosha. Asu means very quickly, and Tosha means pleased. So he's easily to please. So if you, in a very open-hearted way, just apologize, throw yourself at his feet for his mercy, begging him for mercy in a straightforward way, then he will be forgiving, because his heart is basically very soft. So now, with Lord Brahma in text 7, he says, who would dare commit an offense at the lotus feet of Lord Shiva? And after instructing all the demigods, text 8, the pittas and the lords of all the living entities who had attended the sacrifice and were all distraught, Lord Brahma took them with him and left for the abode of Lord Shiva, known as Kailash, Kailash Hill. So now, in text 9 to 32, there is a description of the very sweet and wonderful natural opulences of Kailash. Because Lord Shiva himself lives in a very, very simple way. He does not even possess a house. He lives very austerely, simply. But yet, it is not because he has no opulence that he lives in that way. He doesn't want to be bothered because he is meditating upon Lord Ram. Does not want to be bothered. But yet he has so much opulence, but it is of a wonderful kind. So we're going to hear about the very natural and soothing, peaceful mode of goodness, opulences in Kailash. The abode known as Kailash, so all the demigods and the great sages, they are going to see Lord Shiva in his abode of Kailash. Why? They want to beg his forgiveness, his pardon. The abode known as Kailash is full of different herbs and vegetables, and it is sanctified by Vedic hymns and mystic yoga practices. Thus the residents of that abode are demigods by birth and have all mystic powers. Beside them, there are other human beings who are known as Kinaras and Gandharvas, and are accompanied by their beautiful wives, who are known as the Apsaras, or angels. Kailash is full of mountains, filled with all kinds of valuable jewels, and there's no mining, and no horrible mining that causes ecological disasters. So there's mountains are filled with valuable jewels and minerals and surrounded by all varieties of valuable trees and plants. The top of that hill, Kailash, is nicely decorated by various types of deer. It is said that there are the places, especially where the black deer reside, they are very auspicious. The atmosphere is very... It is so charged with auspiciousness or goodness, purity. There are many waterfalls, and in the mountains there are many beautiful caves in which very beautiful wives of the mystics are found. On Kailash Hill there is always the rhythmical sound of the peacock's sweet vibrations and the bees humming. Cuckoos are always singing, and other birds whisper amongst themselves. There are tall trees with straight branches that appear to call the sweet birds. And when herds of elephants pass through the hills, it appears that the Kailash Hill moves with them. When the waterfalls resound, it appears that Kailash Hill does also. The whole of Kailash Hill is decorated with various kinds of trees, of which the following names may be mentioned: Mandaraji, Parijataji, Saral, Tamal, Tala, Kovidar, Asan, Arjun, Amrita Jati, Mango, Kadamba, Duli Kadamba, Naga. These are all very, very, these trees have very fragrant, fragrant flowers. So when there's a garden that's full of fragrant flowers from fragrant trees, the whole atmosphere becomes very sweet. Champak, Pattal, Ashok, Bakul, Kunda and Kuravak. The entire hill is decorated with such trees. So if anyone has lived in India, he's familiar with at least some of these trees there. Parijat, Kadamba, so fragrant. Bakul, Champak, Naga. Very, very, very fragrant. Different seasons, they blossom. The entire hill is decorated with such trees, which produce flowers with fragrant aromas. There are other trees which also decorate hills, such as the golden lotus flower, the cinnamon tree, Malati, Kubja, Malika, and Madhvi. Some of these are vines that also have very fragrant flowers like jasmine. Kailash Hill is also decorated with such trees as Kata, Japfruit, Jula, Banyan trees, Plaksha, Nyagrodhas, and trees producing Asafoetida. There are also trees of betel nuts and Bhujapatra, as well as Rajapuga, blackberries, and similar other trees. There are mango trees, Priyal, Madhuka, Inguda. Beside these, there are other trees like thin bamboo, Kichak, and varieties of other bamboo trees, all decorating the tract of Kailash Hill. There are different kinds of lotus flowers, such as Kamud, Utval, and Satapatra, 100 leaves. The forest appears to be a decorated garden, and the small lakes are full of various kinds of birds, who whisper very sweetly. There are many other kinds of animals also, like deer, monkeys, boars, lions, Vriksha, bears, Salyakas, forest cows, must be Nilagai, Gavya. Gavya is what is like antelopes of sorts. Tigers, small deer, buffalo, and many other animals who are fully enjoying their lives. There are varieties of deer such as Kanantra, Ekapad, Ashvasya, Vrika, and Kasturi. Kasturi is the musk deer, which bears musk. Beside the deer, there are many banana trees which decorate the small hillside lakes very nicely. So what a scene with the fragrant trees and vines everywhere and the birds singing their different melodies and the fruit trees giving their fruit and the lakes and waterfalls and animals roaming around. So very, very wonderful. There's a small lake named Alakanand in which Sati used to take her bath, and that lake is especially auspicious. All the demigods, after seeing the specific beauty of Kailasha, had come, were struck with wonder at the great opulence to be found there. Thus the demigods saw the wonderfully beautiful region known as Alak in the forest known as Sogandika, which means full of fragrance. This forest is known as Sogandika because its abundance of lotus flowers. They also saw the two rivers named Nanda and Alakanand. Raise your hand if you've ever seen the Alakanand River. Sahasra? You've been to Badrinath? You've been? You've been? Maybe. Okay. These two rivers are sanctified by the dust of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda. And these rivers, these holy rivers are actually quite amazing. I remember before, the first time I went to India, I was worried what will happen if I go to the Ganges and bathe, and it feels like just any old, ordinary old river. I was worried like that, but it isn't. It's actually completely different. And even in Badrinath, there's the Alakanand River, which passes. And there's a bridge to go to... Have you been? No. Badrinath, yes. Alakanand. Snan? No. It's too cold. Hot spring. Yeah. So just by walking over this river, the whole atmosphere changes. It's like walking into a different world. So Kailash actually was a different world. We're used to, just like when if you go downtown to the city, your consciousness is affected in a particular way. Hustle and bustle and your desires increase. But if you go into the countryside, into the bush, into the fragrant fields and the trees and things like that, your consciousness changes completely because there's a difference in subtlety. Basically, the difference is the modes of nature, the mode of passion, ignorance in the city as compared to the mode of goodness in the country, in the bush. So in Kailash, the atmosphere is still more subtle and still more auspicious even than the countryside. Watch us speak of the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan, where the atmosphere is surcharged with ecstasy. So there's... It says, Nanda Chalakananda Cha Saritao Bayata Pura Tirtha Para Padambuja Raja Sativa Pavane. They also saw the two rivers named Nanda and Alakanand. These two rivers are sanctified by the dust of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this verse, the word Tirthapad is used. Tirthapad means... it's the name of Krishna, of the Supreme Lord, because his feet are worshipable. They are places of pilgrimage. My dear Vidura, the celestial damsels came down to those rivers in their aeroplanes with their husbands. And after sexual enjoyment, they entered the water and enjoyed sprinkling their husbands with water. So here is something Prabhupada says in the purport. Lord Govinda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is described here as Tirthapad. Tirtha means sanctified place, and Pada means the lotus feet of the Lord. People go to a sanctified place to free themselves from all sinful reactions. In other words, those who are devoted to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, automatically become sanctified. The Lord's lotus feet are called Tirthapada because under their protection there are hundreds and thousands of saintly persons who sanctify the sacred places of pilgrimage. Srila Narottama Das Thakur, a great acharya, a great teacher of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, advises us not to travel to different places of pilgrimage. Undoubtedly, it is troublesome to go from one place to another. But one who is intelligent can take shelter of the lotus feet of Govinda and thereby automatically be sanctified as a result of his pilgrimage. Anyone who is fixed in the service of the lotus feet of Govinda is called Tirthapada. So Tirthapada means the Lord, and it means because his feet are holy place, are sanctified, and everywhere his lotus feet touches are places of pilgrimage. But also Tirthapad means the devotees of the Lord, because they have taken shelter of Krishna's feet, of Krishna's service, of Krishna. Therefore, they too are places of pilgrimage and capable of purifying others. So Narottama Das Thakur is Prabhupada explaining, because especially in India, and also all religions have their places of pilgrimage. The Islamic followers, the Muslims, go to Mecca, Medina. The Christians go to, where do they go?
Jerusalem,
Bethlehem. The Jews go to Jerusalem. The Buddhists go to Buddh Gaya. And everyone has their place. What's the purpose of going to a place of pilgrimage? It is to get purified. Purified means the impurities that cover our heart, they are removed. And one's true nature is more exhibited. So Narottama Das Thakur says that there is no true reason to go to a place of pilgrimage. You have to travel so many miles, because there is a purpose in going to that place of pilgrimage. The purpose is purification. And ultimately, when one is fully purified, one will place one's heart, one's consciousness, fully at the lotus feet of the Lord, of Govinda, of Krishna. So therefore, Narottama Das Thakur advises that instead of taking all the trouble to go to the place of pilgrimage, rather circumvent that and simply get to the actual point. And what is that point? Which is the purpose of going to the place of pilgrimage? That point is to take shelter of Govinda. What does taking shelter of Govinda mean? Taking shelter of Govinda means surrendering one's heart to him. Oh Krishna, oh Govinda, from this moment I am yours. I am yours. I have tried for so many lives. In this life I have attempted to become happy on my own. Oh Krishna, I am giving up that attempt. I am giving myself to you. I am giving up my selfish tendencies. So this is the attempt of the devotee and the ultimate purpose of pilgrimage. Now I am yours. I wish to serve you. So of course, it's not that one just surrenders, giving oneself to Govinda, to Krishna, at a particular time and place, and then it's done with. That is not the nature of surrender or true love or true devotion. Devotion means that it is a constant fact of one's life that Krishna, I am your servant. So constant means continuous. Continuously giving our heart to Krishna. That is what it means to be a devotee. This is Bhajantananya Manaso Getva Buddhidi Asyuta. This is a Mahatma. Mahatmanastu Mam Partha Daivam Prakritam Asyuta. He takes shelter, a great soul, a Mahatma, means a devotee. He takes shelter of Daivam Prakritam, the spiritual energy, which means Krishna service. Bhajantananya. He worships me with his mind, not just physically, but with his heart, his consciousness, his mind. Continuously, ananya, without deviation. But janti, he worships me. Because he knows that I am the Supreme Lord. This is actually the natural constitutional position of every soul. And every soul, every person is truly ultimately in their heart of hearts longing for this connection, relationship with Krishna out of love, loving service, devotion. So Narottama Das Thakur says again, he does not need to travel on various pilgrimage for he can enjoy all the benefits of such travel simply by engaging in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord. Such a pure devotee who has implicit faith in the lotus feet of the Lord can create sacred places in any part of the world where he decides to remain. So very interesting. So if one takes shelter of Tirthapad, it's just like if you put your fingers in an electric outlet, not that we're recommending this, but if you do that and then someone touches you, they will get an electrifying experience. So similarly, if someone takes shelter of Krishna, Tirthapad, he who's wherever he is becomes a holy place. If someone takes shelter of him, the Lord, he also becomes a transmitter of the spiritual energy and a holy place himself. Tirtha Korvanti Tirthani, verse from the 13th chapter of the first canto. The places of tirthas, or holy places, are sanctified due to the presence of pure devotees. Any place automatically becomes a place of pilgrimage if either the Lord or his pure devotee remains or resides there. In other words, such a pure devotee who is engaged 100% in the service of the Lord can remain anywhere in the universe, and that part of the universe immediately becomes a sacred place where he can peacefully render service to the Lord as the Lord desires. So I'll continue with the description of Kailash. After the damsels of the heavenly planets bathe in the water, it becomes yellowish and fragrant due to the kumkum from their bodies. Thus the elephants come to bathe there with their wives, the she-elephants, and they also drink the water, although they are not thirsty. The airplanes of the heavenly denizens are bedecked with pearls, gold, and many valuable jewels. The heavenly denizens are compared to clouds in the sky, decorated with occasional flashes of electric lightning. While traveling, the demigods passed over the forest known as Saugandhika, which is full of varieties of flowers, fruits, and desire trees. While passing over the forest, they also saw the region of Yakeshwar, which means Kuvera. In that celestial forest, there were many birds whose necks were colored reddish and whose sweet sounds mixed with the humming of the bees. The lakes were abundantly decorated with crying swans as well as strong-stemmed lotus flowers. All these atmospheric influences unsettled the forest elephants who flocked together in the sandalwood forest, and the blowing wind agitated the mind of the damsels there for further sexual enjoyment. But as Prabhupada explains in the purport, that when one has a deep, deep spiritual taste, that type of agitation becomes insignificant. And Prabhupada explains that in the spiritual world, in Vaikuntha, the women are more beautiful, the men are more handsome, the breezes are sweeter. But no one becomes agitated or disturbed due to passion, because they are fixed in something far superior, spiritual service. Paramdrispanavartate. The inhabitants are so spiritually enlightened that in the presence of such spirituality, sex life is insignificant. So the demigods also saw that the bathing ghats and their staircases were made of Vaidurya money, which is a kind of gem. The water was full of lotus flowers. Passing by such lakes, the demigods reached a place where there was a great banyan tree. That banyan tree was 800 miles high. That's high. And its branches spread over 600 miles around. The tree cast a fine shade which permanently cooled the temperature, yet there was no noise of birds. The demigods saw Lord Shiva sitting under that tree, which was competent to give perfection to mystic yogis and deliver all people. As grave as time eternal, he appeared to have given up all anger. Lord Shiva sat there, surrounded by saintly persons like Kuvera, the master of the Guyakas, and the four Kumaras who were already liberated souls. Lord Shiva was grave and saintly. Lord Shiva was seated on a straw mattress and was speaking to all present, including the great sage Narada, to whom he specifically spoke about the absolute truth. So Narada Muni is considered the greatest of sages, and Lord Shiva was instructing him. So we are reminded of how powerful and great and exalted Lord Shiva is, because he's even instructing Narada Muni. His left leg was placed on his right thigh, and his left hand was placed on his left thigh. In his right hand he held Rudraksha beads. Those are the beads that the worshippers of Lord Shiva carry. This sitting posture is called Viryasan. He sat in the Viryasan posture, and his finger was in the mode of argument. All the sages and demigods headed by Indra, they were all there. They finally had come to, and they had met Lord Shiva after passing through a beautiful Kailash. They offered their respectful obeisances unto Lord Shiva with folded hands. Lord Shiva was dressed in saffron garments, and he was absorbed in trance, thus appearing to be the foremost of all sages. We'll read a little of the purport. It's about half. So Prabhupada explains some of the words in the purport, and here he says, another significant word is yoga kaksham. Yoga kaksha is the sitting posture in which the left thigh is fixed under one's tightly knotted saffron-colored garment. Also the word manunam adya are significant here, because they mean a philosopher, or one who is thoughtful and can think very nicely. Thinking nicely means deeply. Such a man is called Manu. Lord Shiva is described in this verse as the chief of all thinkers. Lord Shiva, of course, does not engage in useless mental speculation, but as stated in the previous verse, he is always thoughtful regarding how to deliver the demons from their fallen condition of life. It is said that during the advent of Lord Chaitanya, Sadashiva appeared as Advaita Prabhu, and Advaita Prabhu's chief concern was to elevate the fallen conditioned souls to the platform of devotional service to Lord Krishna. Since people were engaged in useless occupations which would continue their material existence, Lord Shiva, in the form of Lord Advaita, appealed to the Supreme Lord to appear as Lord Chaitanya to deliver these illusioned souls. Actually, Lord Chaitanya appeared on the request of Lord Advaita. Similarly, Lord Shiva has a sampradaya, the Rudra sampradaya, and he is always thinking about the deliverance of the fallen souls as exhibited by Lord Advaita Prabhu. So this is the meditation of great souls. They are paradukhi dukhi, paradukha dukhi. Their unhappiness is the unhappiness of others. For themselves, a great soul is Brahma Bhuta Prasanatmana Sochati Nakamshati. Great souls, truly exalted souls, they are beyond any misery. Misery cannot touch them. But yet, they feel compassion. So there is a kind of empathetic experience of the suffering of others due to that compassion, and therefore their activities are compassionate and they are trying to help others. And we see this. There are so many saints in the history of this world. So many have preached and undergone such hardship to help others get to the spiritual path, and sometimes the people praise them, and sometimes they kill them, the ordinary people. They're so threatened by it. Of course, the favorite example is Lord Jesus Christ, who was actually crucified. Gee, how incredible. How incredible. He was killed by those who were envious of him. They didn't like his powerful preaching, so they killed him in a horrible way. And Haridas Thakur was chanting the Lord's name, and he was ordered to be beaten to death by being caned in all the marketplaces of the town. 22 marketplaces. So if one is truly compassionate, it forces one to take one's life in one's hands to help others. So this is actually the compassionate heart and compassionate mood of a Vaishnava, a great devotee, that he's willing to take all risks for the benefit of others. In other words, he has no selfishness. He sees as clearly as we can see the hand in front of us. They see the saintly people, they see the suffering of others, and they feel pain by the suffering of others. They see that these souls are actually eternal, they are souls, but yet still they are trapped due to ignorance in the material world. So they try to give knowledge, transcendental knowledge, of who should be worshipped, that one shouldn't live in a materialistic way. One should use one's human life properly to atato brahma jigyasa, to discover what the purpose of life is, inquire as to the purpose of life. So they shake the world a little bit, or a lot sometimes, saintly people, to wake them up. So Lord Shiva, he has a whole sampradaya, a community of devotees who follow him, and it's called the Nimbarka Sampradaya, and Advaita Acharya, an associate of Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was also considered Lord Sadashiva, or a form of Shiva. So Lord Shiva's lotus feet were worshipped by both the demigods and the demons, but still, in spite of his exalted position, as soon as he saw that Lord Brahma was amongst all the other demigods, he immediately stood up and offered him respect by bowing down and touching Lord Brahma's lotus feet, just as Vamanadev offered his respectful obeisances to Kasyapa Muni. Here is Srila Prabhupada's purport. Kasyapa Muni was in the category of the living entities, but he had a transcendental son, Vamanadev, who was an incarnation of Vishnu. Thus, although Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he offered his respects to Kasyapa Muni. Similarly, when Lord Krishna was a child, he used to offer his respectful obeisances to his mother and father, Nanda and Yasoda. Also, at the Battle of Kurukshetra, Lord Krishna touched the feet of Maharaj Yudhisthira because the king was his elder. It appears then that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or rather the Personality of Godhead, Lord Shiva, and other devotees, in spite of their being situated in an exalted position, instructed by practical example how to offer obeisances to their superiors. Lord Shiva offered his respectful obeisances to Brahma, because Brahma was his father, just as Kasyapa Muni was the father of Vamanadev. So Lord Shiva, seeing Brahma amongst the demigods, offered his obeisances. He offered respect, even though Lord Shiva is actually ultimately a superior personality than Brahma. But because Brahma's position as the father of Lord Shiva is higher, so Lord Shiva, although truly superior, offered obeisances to Brahma. So all the sages who were sitting with Lord Shiva, such as Narada and others, also offered their respectful obeisances to Lord Brahma. After being so worshipped, Lord Brahma, smiling, began to speak to Lord Shiva. Here's what Prabhupada said in the purport. Lord Brahma was smiling because he knew that Lord Shiva was not only easily satisfied, but easily irritated as well. He was afraid that Lord Shiva might be in an angry mood because he had lost his wife and had been insulted by Daksha. In order to conceal this fear, he smiled and addressed Lord Shiva as follows. So although Lord Brahma told the demigods to go to Lord Shiva and don't worry, he is very kind, he will forgive you, when they actually got there, Lord Brahma himself was afraid, because he knew that Lord Shiva has the power. Yes, it's true, he's easily pleased and he forgives very easily, but he's also so easily angered. This is the meaning of asutosha. Very easily pleased, very easily satisfied, but also very easily angered. So Lord Brahma was smiling, trying to keep Lord Shiva in a pleasant, happy mood, to conceal his fear too. So this is what Lord Brahma said to Lord Shiva. Lord Brahma said, so there are some verses from here until 49, basically, from text 42 to 49, that Brahma tries to influence Lord Shiva in a very humble way by glorifying him. And he wants him to give up his anger and cool down, even though basically Lord Shiva has done so already. And also to write the great punishments that Lord Shiva has cast upon Daksha and Bhrigu, etc. He wants things reversed so everything can go on as before. So Lord Brahma said, "My dear Lord Shiva, I know that you are the controller of the entire material manifestation. The combination mother and father of the cosmic manifestation and the supreme Brahman beyond the cosmic manifestation as well. I know you in that way. My dear Lord, you create this cosmic manifestation. You maintain it and annihilate it by the expansion of your personality, exactly as a spider creates, maintains, and winds up its web." So he's praising Lord Shiva and telling him how powerful he is, that everything is, you're the controller of the entire material cosmos, you're the creator, you are the maintainer, and you are the destroyer of everything. Actually, that is the Krishna's position, or the expansions of Krishna. But he is speaking to Lord Shiva as if Lord Shiva is the Supreme, because Lord Shiva is none different from the Supreme, but yet he is somewhat different from the Supreme, as yogurt is different from milk. Yogurt is just transformed milk, but it's not exactly the same as milk. But here in these two verses, he glorifies Lord Shiva's position as the creator of the universe, the maintainer of the universe, the annihilator of the universe. You are the mother, the father. Everything comes from you. So first, when you approach a great personality, it's proper to glorify him, especially if you're not sure if he's angry or not. So this is basically what Lord Shiva is doing, what Brahma is doing. Then he continues, "My dear Lord, your lordship has introduced the system of sacrifices through the agency of Daksha. And thus one might derive the benefits of religious activities in economic development. Under your regulative principles, the institution of the four varnas and ashramas is respected. The brahmanas therefore vow to follow the system strictly. O most auspicious Lord." So in that verse, he's saying that when one there's different results one can get from the activities one performs. So here he continues that theme. So he's saying that Daksha is acting as a brahmana. He was acting as a brahmana and he was performing sacrifices. And it is you who introduced the system of sacrifices. O most auspicious Lord, you have ordained the heavenly sacrifices. They go in one direction, depending upon how we use our life, there'll be a different result. So if one performs sacrifices or lives in a pious way, one will get a pious or a good result. And if one lives in an ignorant way, one will get an ignorant result. And the ignorant result is suffering, and a pious result is happiness, basically, in its different forms. So he is the creator. So Brahma is subtly telling him that you're the creator of all these different systems. And depending upon a person acts, if one acts piously, he'll get a pious result, go to the heavenly planet. Similarly, for others who are miscreants, you have destined different kinds of hells which are horrible and ghastly. Yet sometimes it is found that their destinations are just the opposite. It is very difficult to ascertain the cause of all this. So Daksha, who was performing a sacrifice, ended up in a hellish condition, even though he was doing something that was quite authorized and pious. So how can one understand ultimately what are the result of what one's activities are going to be? Sometimes one does all the right thing and horrible things happen to him. And at other times someone does wrong things and he seems to prosper. So this is very mysterious, Prabhupada's purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is called the Supreme Will. It is by the Supreme Will that everything is happening. It is said, therefore, that not a blade of grass moves without the Supreme Will. Generally, it is prescribed that performers of pious activities are promoted to the higher planetary systems, devotees are promoted to the Vaikuntha worlds, and impersonal speculators are promoted to the impersonal Brahman effulgence. But it sometimes so happens that a miscreant like Ajamil is immediately promoted to the Vaikuntha Loka simply by chanting the name of Narayan. Although when Ajamil uttered this vibration, he intended to call his son Narayan. So this will be narrated in the sixth canto this pastime. Lord Narayan took it seriously and immediately gave him promotion to Vaikuntha Loka, despite his background, which was full of sinful activities. Similarly, King Daksha was always engaged in the pious activities of performing sacrifices. Yet simply because of creating a little misunderstanding with Lord Shiva, he was severely taken to task. His head was cut off. The conclusion is therefore that the Supreme Will is the ultimate judgment. No one can argue about this upon this. A pure devotee, so this is something that's very hard to accept. That yes, we perform activities in this world and there are results that come to us due to those activities. But ultimately what happens is Krishna's supreme will, because he is the upadrastanamantita bhakta bhakta maheshvara. He is the permitter, the overseer, the sanctioner. We have our desires, but when Krishna sanctions, they can only be fulfilled, or something can happen only when Krishna sanctions it. So it is very difficult for people to accept this point, that ultimately when something happens to us, bad, that we don't like, that we hate, that ultimately there is goodness behind it, the supreme goodness. This is the will of Krishna. So people don't like this point. People like to worship God when they think that prosperity will come. It is very difficult actually to give our heart to the Supreme at all times, continuously, uninterruptedly. Very difficult. The tendency is to praise God when times are good and to be angry at Him when times are bad. But a devotee submits in all circumstances to the supreme will of the Lord, accepting it as all auspicious. His faith is so deep that he knows that Krishna is in control, and he's completely comfortable with that. And therefore, it is only an actual devotee who can live in this world without anxiety and full of character, because he doesn't try to manipulate the world. He accepts Krishna's mercy as it comes and doesn't try to change it. He accepts that what will happen, that good and bad are very hard to perceive, and what is fortunate and what is unfortunate is very hard to tell in this world, because sometimes we think something fortunate has happened to us, and then later on that it boomerangs, it turns around, and it turns out to be the greatest cause of our misfortune. This happens all the time. Every once in a while you read about somebody who is happily married or something, and he wins the lottery, he wins these millions of dollars, and everything becomes ruined or something. So was that fortunate or unfortunate? Very hard to tell in this world. So a devotee, he accepts that because Krishna sanctioned this. There is fortune in it, although it may be covered. And there are so many examples of this. The Bhagavatam is being spoken by Prakrit Maharaj, who is a great example of this. But it is very easy to preach about it, to tell others about it, but when it happens to one self, the mind tends to rebel. But yet, Lord Brahma explains in the 14th canto, 14th chapter of the 10th canto, Tateyano kampam susamikshamano. Bhunjane Vapmatri Pavapa Kam Ridvag Vibapodam Vidatana Namaste Jivati Yosa Mukti Pade Sadaya Bhak. The purport, Prabhupada continues, of this verse is that when a devotee is in a calamitous condition, he takes it as a benediction of the Supreme Lord and takes responsibility himself for his past misdeeds. In such a condition, he offers still more devotional service and is not disturbed. One who lives in such a disposition of mind, engaged in devotional service, is the most eligible candidate for promotion to the spiritual world. In other words, such a devotee's claim for promotion to the spiritual world is assured in all circumstances. This is the only secure position in this very tumultuous material world where no one really knows what's going to happen next. We live our life as if there is a preordained script according to our desire. But there is no guarantee. In fact, it never happens according to our desire. There are so many ups and downs. But a person who learns how to see Krishna's mercy in everything in this way, and Vidvag Vibhapodam Vidadana Namaste, that he's always offering his obeisances to Krishna regardless of what happens, with great devotion, not mechanically, but from the depths of his heart, such a person will certainly go back to Godhead, to the spiritual world. So Brahma was speaking about to Lord Shiva and saying, the destinations of people, they are mixed. One cannot tell where one is going to go. My dear Lord, devotees who have fully dedicated their lives unto your lotus feet certainly observe your presence as Paramatma in each and every being. So a devotee sees in everyone's heart, he sees that the Lord is there. Sarvasya chahamidhi sanavistho. Therefore, seeing that Krishna is in everyone's heart, they do not differentiate between one living entity and another, saying this one is good, this one is bad. No, they see Pandita Samadarshana, Vidyavanaya Sampane, Brahmani Gavihastini. They have equal vision. This is the only platform where there's actually equality. Politically speaking, there's so many countries who try to make political equality, but actually, and try to make the cultures mix and everyone is equal, but it doesn't work exactly like that. But on the level of the spiritual level of seeing that the Lord is in everyone's heart, that is the level that, if one is spiritually advanced in that way, that is the level that one can see equally all living entities, but not only humans, also the animals, the cows, the dogs, the horses, the elephants. They all have God within the heart, so it's not that one is respected, the humans are respected, and the cows and the goats are killed in that way. No. So such persons who have that vision, that pure vision, treat all other living entities equally. So Brahma is saying to Lord Shiva that you have that vision, you are advanced like that. They never become overwhelmed by anger like animals who see nothing without differentiation. So differentiating between one and another, I'll be this one's friend, I'm this one's enemy, I'll be kind to this one, I'll cheat that one, I like this one, I'd hate this one. These type of differentiations are like the way animals or children think. And they are not considered very exalted. So Prabhupada explains in the purport. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes angry or kills a demon, materially this may appear unfavorable, but spiritually it is a blissful blessing upon him. Therefore, pure devotees do not make any distinction between the Lord's anger and his blessings. They see both with reference to the Lord's behavior with others and themselves. A devotee does not find fault with the behavior of the Lord in any circumstances. So persons who observe, so on one hand there are those who don't see others with differentiation, but here in this verse, in 48, 47, it's the opposite. So persons who observe everything with differentiation, who are simply attached to fruit of activities, who are mean-minded, who are always pained to see the flourishing condition of others and who thus give distress to them by uttering harsh and piercing words, have already been killed by providence. Thus, there is no need for them to be killed again by exalted personalities like you. So he's saying, oh Lord Shiva, what has happened? People like Daksha who are cruel, who are proud, who are envious, who pierce others' hearts with their sharp words, their death is certain. So there's no need for you who see in a pure way, a high, highly exalted way, you see Krishna in everyone's heart, there's no need for you to do what you have done. My dear Lord, if in some places materialists who are already bewildered by the insurmountable illusory energy of the Supreme Godhead sometimes commit offenses, a saintly person with compassion does not take those offenses seriously. knowing that they commit offenses because they are overpowered by the illusory energy, he does not show his prowess to counteract them. It's like if we're in a rowboat, and we're in a lake, and it's very, very foggy, and we're rowing along, and suddenly we see the outline of another boat coming closer, and then it keeps coming closer, and then it bangs into us. What's our immediate reaction? We become angry. How have you done this? You bang right into me. But then if we look and we see, oh, there was no one in the boat, it was just drifting, then what happens to our anger? Who are we going to become angry at? There's no one to become angry about, and the anger immediately goes away. So Lord Shiva is telling, Lord Brahma is suggesting to Lord Shiva that when someone like Daksha does something horrible, bangs into you like a rowboat, criticizes you unnecessarily, improperly, then this isn't him doing it. There's actually no one there. It's just the material energy working. It's just the modes of material nature, the mode of ignorance, anger working through him. So don't blame him. You don't have to show your ability, your powers, what you can actually do to counteract it. No, there's no need. They're overpowered by the illusory energy. It is not them who is acting. So please remember this. My dear Lord, you are never bewildered by the formidable influence of the illusory energy. They become bewildered and do things they shouldn't do, but you never become bewildered. You never become bewildered by the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by Maya. Therefore, you are omniscient and should be merciful and compassionate to those who are bewildered by the same illusory energy and are very much attached to fruitive activities. So therefore, he's begging Lord Shiva, let us put this movie in reverse and let us change all the things that have happened. My dear Lord Shiva, you are a shareholder of the portion of sacrifice and you are the giver of the results. The bad priest did not deliver your share, and therefore you destroyed everything, and the sacrifice remains unfinished. Now you can do the needful and take your rightful share. My dear Lord, by your mercy, the performer of the sacrifice, King Daksha, let him get back his life. Bhaga may get back his eyes, Bhrigu his mustache, and Pusha his teeth. O Lord Shiva, may the demigods and the priests whose limbs have been broken by your soldiers recover from the injuries by your grace. O destroyer of the sacrifice, please take your portion of the sacrifice and let the sacrifice be completed by your grace. Okay. So there are a whole bunch of purports that I wanted to read, but we didn't get a chance. Okay, thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Pashupati Nautas.
From this statement of Bhima, it appears quite even deeper from him to speak that you are to me at least at this point.
He wasn't speaking to you.
No, to Lord Shiva. Parmita appears to be very logical because when Sati gave her body, and when Daksha, also his son, he criticized Lord Shiva right from him, Brahma was present. He didn't dare to speak a single word.
You're talking about Brahma?
Yeah, he didn't dare to tell him anything. And now when we get father, superior person, I did not see to it. So the son, Shiva, had to actually remind him of his position and Daksha's position. He did it, and now Shiva, Brahma is going back to him, and he sarcastically is actually getting on his case, saying, "Your grace, your this and that." But
not sarcastically. This is called nitti, rajniti. This is the proper way. You have to soften him up a little bit. before you ask him politely. Because after all, he was so angry. So what did Lord Brahma actually want? He wanted things to go on properly. The point has been made already, how powerful Lord Shiva is. So he just wanted things to go on, because as he said, the sacrifices still had to go on, because after all, the provision for Daksha to perform sacrifices was created by the Lord. So he wanted it to go on. So things, let us go back. It's like when you make a mistake, you try to retrace your steps and write it as soon as possible. So you are saying that Brahma's mistake was in the beginning. That's basically what you're saying. Okay, so we'll just answer that by saying, of course, this is just pastimes. And Lord Brahma doesn't make a mistake, because even what appears to be a mistake is influenced by the Lord's energy, because he wants to show different things. But aside from that, still, even if you say that he did make a mistake, he's rectifying his mistake as quickly as possible. So that's intelligent. And it's something that we can also learn. That when we make a mistake, that's natural. To live is to make mistakes. But an intelligent person rectifies his mistakes as quickly as possible. That's practically the definition of intelligence. Intelligent people still make mistakes, but they quickly rectify their mistakes. They have awareness of that it is a mistake, and secondarily of what to do to rectify it. So either way, Brahma is faultless. First way, because it's ultimately Leela, and the second way is, if even if you say he did something wrong, he's quickly rectifying it. So that's faultless and intelligent. And he's not speaking sarcastically, Lord Shiva, he's speaking sweetly. He's just saying you be merciful. Just like sometimes when If there's a new devotee and he does something, and he takes your clothes, your chadar, because he's cold, and you become angry, and you take his chadar, you take two of his chadars. So someone will say, "Oh, Sahastra, you are such an old devotee. You know so many things. He's, look at this one, he's just new. It's for you to do these things, this isn't. He can do them, okay. But you know he doesn't know what he's doing, but you know what you're doing, you're so expert. So give up your anger and give him back his chatters." So that's not being sarcastic. Because, say if you're angry, you have to speak a little sweetly to the person, sorry. And especially because Lord Brahma was a little afraid that Lord Shiva was still angry, and even Brahma's not powerful enough to overcome the anger of Lord Shiva. Okay, we better stop. It's late. Okay, so we'll continue, and next week, we'll, Krishna allows, we'll finish this pastime by completing chapter 7. Srimad Bhagavatam, and it has a happy ending, so that's good. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Prabhupada Ki Jai.